The top Republican in the House seems to be in a tough spot today. In a new audio recording released today by the New York Times, Kevin McCarthy is heard in a call with Republican leaders days after the deadly January 6th riot. He is describing a conversation about that riot with then-President Trump.
I asked him personally today, does he hold responsibility for what happened? Does he feel bad about what happened? He told me he does have some responsibility for what happened. And he need to acknowledge that.
Okay, let's dig into that. Our Friday Politics Roundtable starts now. Scott Wong, senior congressional reporter at NBC News. Scott, welcome.
Good to be with you.
And Eugene Daniels, White House correspondent and playbook co-author at Politico. Eugene, welcome back to you.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
And Eugene, I'm going to just read through that quote from McCarthy again. He told me he does have some responsibility for what happened, referring there to President Trump and the January 6th insurrection. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's unclear. This is something that McCarthy has said in the past, but I think what's really interesting about this new revelation is that he also told other Republicans about this conversation that he had with President Trump, where he and President Trump agreed he had some kind of responsibility for January 6th. I think that if you asked Trump today whether that conversation went the way that McCarthy relates, he might disagree. He does not think that he has something to do with it, and he said that.
Yeah, you know what, Eugene, we're going to put a pause on your line here. We're having some trouble with it. Scott Wong, I'm going to ask you the same question, and then we're going to play a second piece of tape from McCarthy. So, Scott, why don't you pick it up from there?
Well, clearly, this is not this is not good news for Kevin McCarthy. We've known all along in this Republican Party that McCarthy would need Donald Trump's support to be speaker, and the tape confirms Trump ally suspicions about McCarthy's loyalties, about how he felt about January 6th. Remember, McCarthy had also given a speech on the House floor blaming Trump for fomenting the violence that we saw at the Capitol that day. So it puts McCarthy in a really, really tough spot. The one big question that's still outstanding is, how does President Trump come down on this? And so far, we have not heard from the former president. Everyone is sort of waiting on pins and needles to see how he reacts, if he reacts angrily or if he is, will turn his ire more towards the media and the New York Times. So I think a lot of lawmakers are still in this wait and see mode to see how this is going to play out. It's still very early.
All right, Scott. I think we have Eugene back as well. We have another separate piece of tape from a separate call involving Kevin McCarthy. This is also from the New York Times. And McCarthy is talking to Republican leaders 4 days after the insurrection. And he's talking about advice he would give President Trump, then President Trump, about a possible second impeachment.
Again, I mean, the only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass. And it would be my recommendation we should resign. That would be my take, but I don't think he would take it, but I don't know.
Eugene, if you're still with us, can you hear me here?
I am. I can.
Okay. Now, yesterday, McCarthy flat out denied that he said that, and then the tape came out. I mean, how is this potentially changing Republican politics at the top of the House of Representatives?
Yeah, I mean, he already had, high hopes to being the next speaker if Republicans were to take the House. Everyone knows that he's made that very clear. He doesn't have a lot of support from Trump supporters, people like Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene already. And I think that has continued. You saw Matt Gaetz kind of attack him on Twitter. And so that's the one place where it affects. And then it impacts possibly his relationship with Donald Trump. But WAPO is reporting that McCarthy and Donald Trump spoke last night and that Trump wasn't mad. He wasn't upset about the new audio. And as a matter of fact, they say that Trump saw it as a sign of his continued grip on the Republican Party, that there was, both McConnell and McCarthy who were kind of going back on what they were saying at the very beginning. So it's kind of a fascinating turn of events when you look at how he started the day denying that he ever said it, and then we hear this audio last night.
Well, that is such an interesting point, because what this says to me is that there was a brief moment after the riot when Republican leadership was ready to walk away from Trump. And that's not where they are now, is it, Scott?
Oh, absolutely not. And just, you know, a couple weeks after McCarthy took to the House floor in a very public way and said Trump bears responsibility for the attack, he was back down at Mar-a-Lago, if you remember, you know, hat in hand, seeking support from Trump and pledging his support for Trump, knowing that the party and specifically the conservative base and the voters in the Republican Party had not broken from Trump. They were standing by him. They were defending him. Therefore, conservative lawmakers in the House and the Senate were going to stick with President Trump. And if McCarthy ever wanted to have a future in that party, he was also going to have to realign with Trump and make amends. And that's exactly what's happened. That's what McCarthy has been working on for these past, you know, 1.5 years since the attack. And you know, right now, as far as we understand, they had had a pretty good relationship, frequently speaking on the phone with each other. Clearly, based on the Washington Post, they spoke last night and appeared that things are as good as they can be going. But again, we will wait and see until we hear from Trump directly in a statement.
Well, let's
Scott's right,
turn
and
to
I think
it.
Something that, sorry, what I think is so fascinating
yeah, go ahead,
is that it's kind of the chicken or the egg, right? You have, you know, Republicans who are saying that the voters love Donald Trump so much that they couldn't possibly turn their back on him, and that's kind of why things, you know, bounced back into Trump's corner. But at the same time, had leadership in the Senate, in the House, Republicans writ large, actually done what they said they were going to do and, you know, get off the Trump train, as Lindsey Graham kind of put it, Republican voters may have followed them. And so it is this fascinating kind of if you look back, how that might have changed things moving forward.
Well, let's talk about another lightning rod conservative, Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. She is in court today to fight a lawsuit trying to erase her from the ballot. The claim is she should not be allowed to run because of her alleged role on January 6th. The 14th Amendment says anyone who supported an insurrection or rebellion cannot serve in Congress. Now, she took the stand and described some of her tweets leading up to January 6th.
I was asking people to come for a peaceful march, which is what everyone is entitled to do under their First Amendment, but I was not asking them to actively engage in violence or any type of action.
Scott, what do you make of her argument and this broader case?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think the, you know, one of the most significant aspects of this case has to be that Marjorie Taylor Greene is the first member of Congress to testify under oath about January 6th and, you know, what she was doing and who she was talking to and things like that. This is not in the context of the January 6th investigation, obviously, in the House of Representatives, but she was under oath in a courtroom, and so that's significant. What she said was that she, under oath, she said she did believe that the election was stolen at that time, and she did believe that Joe Biden had lost the election. So the, so you know, they did get her to commit to certain things, but again, it's unclear if you know, this will hold up in a court of law, and if she will actually be, you know, removed from the ballot under the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm. And the folks bringing this lawsuit, I mean, they have said they could bring her into court and potentially perjure herself. So this could be by design, yeah? Scott, sorry?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, the 14th Amendment aspect of this is much more difficult, I think. But you know, if that is part of their intention to try to get her to commit perjury, certainly there were a number of questions that she was asked. She was asked repeatedly about certain tweets that she had sent out, and those were presented up on the screen. And so there were a number of opportunities, you know, where she was asked about her own words and was actually in a position where she was not able to confirm whether or not she had said those things. So that certainly will be interesting to follow in terms of the perjury aspect.
And I will note that she's not the only one facing these kind of challenges. Arizona Congressman Paul Gosar and Andy Biggs here are facing similar challenges for similar reasons. So we're going to keep a close eye on that. Thank you to Scott Wong, NBC News senior congressional correspondent, and Eugene Daniels, White House correspondent and Playbook co-author at Politico. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.